Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we're standing by for a Greg Rakestraw interview at the Indianapolis Colts. Air date to be 10/19, record date 10/17/2013. And I believe we do have Greg, so we're going to get to him real quick. Hey, Greg, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, buddy. I'm going to tape this. Taping it makes it easier, sir, but it's just so much more fun having you live and vibrant. Of course, you know the countdown, and really all we're going to do is we're going to talk about the Colts and obviously the big elephant in the room, Irsay, and his tweets, and, of course, the Broncos. Okay?
Right.
Yep. Any questions? All right. We'll go in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente, my minions. I tell you what, is always pleased. We don't get to have him very much, but the hardest working professional in both radio, television, and any other type of media that he can get his hands on is one, Mr. Greg Rakestraw from Local 1070 The Fan here in Indianapolis. Now, Greg, you're also the program director there now, right? Sports director?
Yes, sir.
See, it's hard. I try to keep track of all your great accomplishments in broadcasting, but it's hard to do sometimes. Greg Straw, 1070 Fan in Indianapolis here. Obviously, big game here in Indianapolis, and certainly we're a national show, but we focus and feature the Colts every week, and as we've done since the beginning. And part of our Colts segment, we wanted you to come on today, Greg, and talk with us a little bit about the Colts, where they're at, where they're going, and, of course, the big topics of the day. Jim Irsay, either he can't keep his mouth shut, or when he does say something, it's taken completely out of context. And what I'm referring to is a USA Today interview, and there were some comments that were made. I'll let you summarize it. But basically, the long and short of it all is Irsay said he does not regret drafting and releasing Manning and drafting Luck to the Colts, which has created, as you can imagine, a lot of firestorm on social media and throughout the world. So as Jim Irsay makes his tweets, the world always stops and listens to everything that he has to say.
He is the most interesting follow on Twitter in the city of Indianapolis. Let's put it that way. And the only athlete that might rival him on Twitter as his own punter in Pat McAfee. But he is maybe the most news-generating owner in the National Football League. I don't think there's any debate about that anymore, even more so than Jerry Jones. And he is maybe even surpassing Mark Cuban in terms of social media and generating buzz and things like that. Some of it good, some of it bad. You know, the controversy really has stemmed from something that he has said now several times on several occasions. It was just, for whatever reason, this kind of caught the national papers and maybe got the national attention leading into the game with Denver. And that is that if you look back at the Peyton Manning, Bill Polian, and Tony Dungy era, if you say the 10-year period from 2000 through 2010, where the Colts were a playoff team virtually every year, in fact, they were a playoff team every year but one of those seasons, and the fact they only made two Super Bowls and had just one ring, you know, Jim has said, I'm a little disappointed about that. And I think that's fair to say and somewhat understandable. I don't think anybody would disagree, even Peyton Manning, Bill Polian, Tony Dungy, et cetera. What was said was the phrase, we're now building a different model around here, meaning we're going to put as much emphasis on defense and special teams as they did on the offensive side of the football. Some have viewed that as a shot at Peyton Manning. Others, and I think more follow-up commentary, have realized that maybe it was more in the direction of Bill Polian and, to a lesser extent, Tony Dungy. But obviously, being Colts and Broncos week, the national media has taken this and ran with it over the last 48 hours.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I don't personally think that Jim Irsay said anything that he hasn't said. I take your stand on that, but at the same time, it just seems to me like Jim Irsay gets himself in more problems in social media. I like what you said. He's the most interesting man in social media in Indianapolis, and of course, we here in Indianapolis, we follow him quite thoroughly and listen with bated breath on his next tweet and what he's going to say on social media and so forth. And I get that he wants to get the fans interacted. I mean, you know, you'll see him tweet things throughout Colts games, you know, during home games. I implore you to get loud, basically. I order you, my fans, to get loud. You know, I understand that's all about, you know, getting the fans to interact in social media with the Colts and maybe to create some buzz. But sometimes I think that Jim Irsay, of course, it's his team. He can say whatever he wants, but I think sometimes he types before he thinks.
I think a lot of us are guilty of that. I try not to be, but a lot of folks are. And I know this analogy has been made elsewhere by other people, but I'll revert back to it as well. The old Herman Edwards, don't press send line. Think before you tweet, that is now somewhat of a common refrain. No, this is the good and bad that comes with Jim being as accessible and as open as he is on social media. The fact that he is engaged with the fans on a level where hardly any other owner in sports isn't can be a good thing. But when you are on it that frequently, when you are interacting with the people that frequently, this is what tends to happen. Now, again, you know, this was not a tweet per se that got him in quote unquote trouble. This was an interview that he had with Jarrett Bell of USA Today. He echoed very similar comments to Albert Breer of the NFL Network a week earlier after the Seattle victory. If you go back to a conversation with Mike Merritt, who is one of the very good AP writers that is based here in Indianapolis, he basically said the exact same thing during the course of the summer. So for whatever reason, I mean, I know the reason. The reason being is that these teams are playing each other this week. This is when it has caught the national attention, and the platform of USA Today got the national attention. But, again, this is something that he has said now for the better part of the last 4 or 5 months.
So really no big surprise that he said this at all. And, you know, I think Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck have done exactly what they were supposed to do and focus on the match at hand and really have not been that concerned about what Jim Irsay had to say. In fact, I think we have been more concerned about it than Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck. Big homecoming welcome for Peyton Manning. And now another question, speaking of politically correct ways to handle things, as we look at the really tight game, surprisingly tight game, Jacksonville played against the Denver Broncos. At the end of that game, on many occasions, during the post-game press conference, Peyton Manning either refused or just didn't acknowledge the Colts, more or less referred to them as the next opponent. We just happened to be on the road, and our opponent, we have to prepare for our opponent many, many times. He did not actually voiced the Indianapolis Colts. And I think on the other side of the fence, that did not resonate the best with Colts fans either.
Yeah, but I'm not going to give him a free pass, so to speak, on it. Maybe I am in how I say this, but that's not surprising. I've been around Peyton Manning press conferences probably 300 to 400 times in my career. And getting him right after a game or even in midweek to kind of acknowledge the emotional side of things, it's just not him. And the older that he got into his career, the less he would say about kind of the stage, the scene, the atmosphere, the buildup. If you asked him to talk about a specific player, he would do that. Say, hey, this guy's a great player. He does this, 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 and this, and this, and this well. But in terms of talking about the emotional nature of a game, Peyton just does not get into that. Now, he kind of plays the game a little bit, and he does that when he has sit-downs with the national media, say, the day before a game. So, like, for example, the Sunday Night Football crew will meet with members of the Broncos, members of the Colts, on Saturday afternoon. Peyton tends to open up in those settings more than he does for the somewhat bad-sounding gangbangs that we call the press conferences, these mass interviews in front of a locker, whatever the case may be. But the fact that Peyton wouldn't talk about the Colts until kind of Wednesday's conference call, that's not that big of a surprise to me.
Well, and we certainly want to get into last week's game, but I want to look at the Manning brothers, a tale of two cities, if you will, this year. Last year, Eli Manning, at the top of his games with the New York Giants. This year, totally different story. Last year, Peyton Manning at the bottom of his game in a lot of ways, going through rehab, team transfers, a lot of things, and he ended up being pretty much at the top of his game as well as last year. So what would you attribute to the difference between the two Mannings? Is the Giants that bad, or is Eli Manning that bad this year?
He's having a terrible year, and let's acknowledge that while the brothers are similar in some aspects, they are different in others. Peyton has always been the better regular season quarterback. For whatever reason, Eli has had the better postseason runs of the two. But maybe the year that Eli is going through this year is reminiscent of the year that Peyton had back in 2001, when Edgerrin James got hurt early in the season, when the team around him wasn't very good, where it was the end of the Jim Mora era, the 4 years that he was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. That year, Peyton Manning threw 23 interceptions. The only year that he threw more picks was his rookie season, when he threw 28. And maybe, just maybe, he was trying to do too much because of knowing what level of talent was around him. We could be in a similar situation for Eli Manning. So I would treat this season for Eli Manning almost like I would treat the San Diego game this past week for the Colts.
Absolutely.
I think in the long term, it's kind of a blip on the radar. There's nothing I'm seeing from Eli Manning that I think is a long-term fatal flaw in his career. I just think he's having a bad year, and in part because the talent has been downgraded around him.
Well, we're talking with Greg Straw, Program Director of 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan here in Indianapolis, and I don't think anybody knows the Mannings and Peyton Manning, especially in the Colts, through and through like Greg does. I mean, look at the team last Monday night as they went against the San Diego Chargers again against the Powder Blue, and it seemed like last time we played them in the Powder Blue, we had some issues as well. I don't know if it was the coast-to-coast trip or what it was, but the Indianapolis Colts were not on their game, and Phillip Rivers and the Chargers were able to nip at that and really create a situation that they were unable to recover from, and for luck to throw an interception that late in the game when so much was on the line, to me, I found very surprising.
That wasn't unluck. That ball hit Reggie Wayne in the hand. He just tipped it up in the air and ended up going right to a defensive back. Well, of the 12 incompletions that Andrew Luck had in that game, five or six of them were flat drops, and that one was simply, tipped up in the air by Reggie Wayne. Plus, it was late. You're trying to force the ball in there. So, I don't think Andrew Luck felt good about that game, but I thought he was maybe the only guy in offense or defense that could have felt okay about his performance. The only other guy that I thought had a game of quality on Monday night was Adam Vinatieri. And the fact that it's amazing that in his 18-year career, that is the first time that he has hit a pair of 50-yard field goals in the same game, and just the third time that an Indianapolis Colts kicker has done that. So Monday night, given how well the Colts had played for the majority of the season, and especially weeks 3, 4, and 5 of the season, I'm willing to say, okay, that's just a bad game. You uncorked a nasty one. Let's hope that it is not a trend. We'll learn a lot more about this football team and the way they respond on Sunday night, but that was a bad night all around.
Absolutely, and as the Colts, and it brings us to the big elephant in the room, if you will, Indianapolis Colts, the Denver Broncos, Peyton Manning coming home. It's not just any other football game. I know it, you know it, the national media knows it, and all of our fans know it, and the pregame, those that are going to be able to be at Lucas Oil are going to be able to see Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, and a tribute, and others, and a tribute made to Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning will have to humble himself a little bit. They're going to get the standing O. He's going to get the standing O. It's not just any other game, but the Colts do have to prepare for this game because they do have to beat the Denver Broncos on Sunday night.
No doubt about it, and motivation will not be an issue. I don't think focus will be an issue. I don't know how much of a part of the pregame ceremony Peyton Manning is going to be. My guess is none. He'll certainly acknowledge guys like Marvin and Edgerrin before the game. But it will be a night where his focus will be on football. Maybe after the game he'll talk a little bit more about his days in Indianapolis and what it meant for him to be the quarterback of this football team for some 14 seasons. But trust me, all of his focus and all of his teammates' focus and that of the Indianapolis Colts will be about winning what is a very important football game for both teams. The Broncos are 6-0, yet amazingly they are only tied for first in their division because Kansas City is 6-0. And the Colts, as bad as Sunday was or Monday night was, everybody in their division lost. So they are still in first place in the AFC South. So there's a lot of emotional buildup and storylines and things like that. But motivation and focus will not be an issue for either side, I guarantee you.
Well, we're talking with Greg Straw, 1070 The Fan, and 107.5 FM here in Indianapolis. Guy who's followed the Colts for a very long time, knows a lot about the Colts. So I think it's fair to ask you, Greg, what kind of a report card would you give the Indianapolis Colts and Andrew Luck right now?
I'd give him a B+, and that would have been an A or an A- before Monday night's game. You know, I think Miami's a pretty solid team, so I don't think that loss is as devastating as some made it out to be. I was a little concerned after the Oakland game, but frankly, the Raiders are a better team than I thought they would be. Terrell Pryor is a much better NFL quarterback than I thought he would be. Then you look at the way things played out against Seattle, San Francisco, and Jacksonville. Those are all A-level performances. So I'd say a B+. Thankfully for their Colts, they appear to be in about a C+ division this year because Houston has got all kind of a mess going on. They're going to start a third stringer this week against an undefeated Kansas City team. Tennessee has kind of regressed back to where we thought they would be after going 3-0. They're now 3-3, and Jacksonville is just god-awful. So a B-plus is probably good enough for this team to win the AFC South.
Well, absolutely. I don't know if you grade on a curve or not, but how does that change your grade of the Colts or the Broncos, for that matter, whoever wins? If the Colts win the Broncos, beat the Broncos, I think now you got to look at they beat Seattle, and they beat San Francisco, and they beat the Broncos. I think you got to look at these guys are real contenders. However, if they don't beat the Broncos, and the Broncos go 7-0, you got to look at the Broncos. Perhaps maybe this is Peyton Manning's going to get another Super Bowl.
I don't really care what the Broncos do in the regular season. Peyton Manning needs to prove nothing in the regular season. Prove something in January. Everything else for them is just build-up. Get to the Super Bowl. That's really all that matters at this point of his career for Peyton Manning. And for the Colts, if they lose this game, not the end of the world, because you have 5 of your remaining 9 games will be against divisional opponents. To me, the goal for the Colts this season has been simple. They've talked about the Super Bowl, and that's all well and good. My thing for the Colts has been very much about win your division, win a home playoff game. That's what makes 2013 a great year for the Colts. And winning against the Denver Broncos is nice, but frankly, winning those 5 division games the rest of the way, that's a heck of a lot more important.
Well, I know we're all excited about it. Andrew Luck will face off with Peyton Manning this coming Sunday. And I tell you what, it could very well be Andrew Luck number 12's biggest game of his career so far. And I love the editorial that was in the paper, The War of 1812. So are you caught up in the middle? Did you see that cartoon, Greg?
Yeah, Gary Barvell, as always, did a great job on that.
Great job. So where are you at on that? Are you like going to, you know, 1812? Are you got that media neutrality going no matter what?
I'm always rooting for the Colts because I get a paycheck from them.
Never bite the hand that feeds
well,
you, right?
But I live in Indianapolis. I work for the Colts, so I'm kind of rooting for the home team.
Absolutely. Well, we just came out of our segment, and I appreciate you talking with us today. And I know we had to catch up with you earlier on in the week, but we just came out of our college football segment, and certainly we had a good time talking to Ryan Wood out of the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina, about the South Carolina Gamecocks, SEC. I know more in your backyard, Big Ten. Purdue is just really blowing it up. But can IU fans, when I say blowing it up in the bad way, they're boiling down. They're not boiling up. And IU, even though they got beat last week, I think are very competitive within the Big Ten this year. Again, tale of two cities as you look at college football in the Big Ten.
Yeah, Purdue's just not very good. I mean, that's the skinny of it. And they knew that going into the season. I don't think anybody thought they'd be as bad as they are. But I think they got the right guy for the job. They're playing a lot of freshmen. This will get better in 2014 and 2015. And for Indiana, it's real simple. You've got 3 very winnable home games against Minnesota, Illinois, and Purdue. You win those, you go to a bowl. That makes this a very good year for Kevin Wilson.
Absolutely. A very good year for Kevin Wilson. Greg Rakestraw, 1070 The Fan, WIBC, and Program Director 107.5. Greg, I'm a man of my word. I could talk to you all night long, but I promise you I'd keep you to a window. I always like to ask all my guests there, is there anything that you'd like to share with us that I've not asked you, or anything you'd like to talk about with the Colts or IU, Purdue, anything that's on your mind? The government shut down,
no,
anything.
I think we're in good shape, my friend. I appreciate the time.
All right. Greg Shaw. Greg, where can people find your work and your masterpieces on social media?
1070thefan.com is the website where you can find my college sports blog. Of course, you can listen to me on the Colts Veteran Radio Network, 107.5, 1070 The Fan, and on Twitter, very simple, @GregRakestraw, first name, last name.
All right, Greg, thank you. All right, buddy,
All right, thanks, buddy.
It, man. See you. Bye-bye.
Anytime.
Greg Rakestraw interview just completed. We are getting ready to start our interview with Ryan.
Hello? Hold on just a second.
Hi, this is Greg Rakestraw.
Hey, Greg, it's Tom. I saw you called. Like right when you hung up, so I didn't know if there was something you needed. I think maybe you just accidentally dialed my number, or I accidentally dialed your number. I don't know. But I appreciate your time you gave me, bud. See ya.
Hello, this is Ryan Wood.
Hey, Ryan, it's Tom. I'm sorry, I just realized I didn't text you before I called. I apologize about that. Are you ready? Is this good?
Yep, this is good.
Okay, I'll just do a normal just countdown just for the separation in the tape, and
okay.
Then I'll just go right into the interview. It's Ryan Wood, right?
Yes, Ryan Wood.
Okay, all right. We're going to go here in one, three, two. One. All right, welcome back to the balance. My name's Saul Marquis, El Presidente, my minions. I tell you what a great Saturday it is. Just finished up our racing segment, and I had to catch up with our next guest here earlier on in the week, just because everybody's busy schedules are going, and we would love to have him live sometime. But certainly a great guest, an honor to have Ryan Wood, beat writer for the South Carolina Gamecocks of the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina. Ryan, welcome to the balance. First-time guest. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, doing pretty good. How are you?
Fantastic. I tell you what, it's an honor to have you on. A lot of times here, you know, based and nestled here in Indianapolis, even though we're a nationwide show, I know a lot of times we get tied up in the Big Ten really not. I don't even know why we call it the Big Ten anymore, but that's another segment for another show. And some others, but it's always good. Anytime we can get somebody on from the SEC to talk with us, it's a great time. Now I want to dive right into this because I know you're very, very busy, and I'm a man of my word. I certainly wanted to keep you to a minimum there. But we look at South Carolina Gamecocks, and we look at the game that they had last week. I mean, when you look at a loss like that, and maybe it's just me as a media guy looking at things from the outside in, and I know you're in the huddle there in Gamecock country per se, but did South Carolina all but seal their fate with a loss last week to Georgia?
Actually, that was a couple weeks ago that they
lost to Georgia.
I'll tell you, at the time, it certainly seemed like they had. I think before this rash of injuries that Georgia has had, that offense looked unstoppable. Even in a defensive conference like the SEC, you look at the game that Georgia had at home against LSU, almost 100 points scored in that game combined. It just looked like South Carolina, with that one loss, had fallen out of contention. And then this past Saturday happened. They beat Arkansas on the road 52-7. And beyond that, it was really a perfect Saturday for South Carolina in the SEC East race, because everybody else had their slip-ups. Georgia lost to Missouri. Florida lost to LSU. Missouri lost starting quarterback James Franklin. Everything that needed to happen to kind of pull South Carolina back into the SEC East race happened in just a few hours on one day. It was definitely a memorable day for the program. So now here you sit if you're a South Carolina fan. South Carolina needs Georgia to lose one more game because they don't own the head-to-head tiebreaker. Georgia kind of resembles the Walking Dead right now, so with their rash of injuries, that's certainly possible. And if that happens, they control their destiny. They got a couple big games coming up later in the year, but it starts with a trip to Knoxville to face Tennessee this weekend. Hello? Hello? Hello?
You've reached Ryan Wood, South Carolina beat writer for the Charleston Post and Courier. I cannot come to my phone right now, but if you please leave your name, number, and a detailed message, I'll call you as soon as I can. Thank you very much, and have a nice day.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Ryan, it's Tom. I'll call you back here in just a second.
If you're satisfied.
Hello?
Hey, Ryan, it's Tom. I am so sorry about that. Everything just went blank, and then you know how computers are. You got to wait for them to restart, and because I have all this equipment, it takes everything forever, time to reboost. So I apologize
okay.
about that.
Okay.
Are you
problem.
Good to go? Are you good to go?
Yes.
All right. We'll do it here in 1, 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Saul Marquis. Time for College Football Saturday. Really appreciate our next guest taking some time to join us today. We had to catch up with him a little bit earlier this week just because everybody's schedules are very, very busy. And it's always a pleasure to have somebody on from the SEC and joining us now from Charleston, South Carolina, the Post beat writer for the South Carolina Gamecocks. For the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina, is one, Mr. Ryan Wood. Ryan, how you doing, sir?
Hey, doing pretty good. How are you?
Fantastic. I tell you what, I really appreciate you taking some time to join us. Like I said, we don't always get a lot of time to talk to people in the SEC conference, certainly one of the biggest conferences in college football. And if you're not a SEC fan, you're certainly not a college football fan. We take a lot of time talking about the Big Ten around here, so it's always good to have a guest from the SEC here with us. We're talking with you today, I'll get right into this, about the number 11 South Carolina Gamecocks, 5-1. And I guess a couple weeks ago with the game against Georgia and a loss against Georgia, and you look at that, when that happened, were you all but certain that your hopes for a national championship with South Carolina all but over?
I really was, and I think even now the national championship is still maybe a bit far out of reach. There are 8 undefeated teams in the top 10 that are separating, South Carolina from that number one spot. However, when you look at just a couple weeks ago when they lost at Georgia, the way that offense looked, that Bulldogs offense looked when they were healthy, they looked unstoppable. It certainly looked like an offense that was going to be able to score however many points it was going to need to win the rest of the games on its schedule. But then injuries happened, and Georgia's had a rash of injuries just in the past couple weeks. And when you look at this past Saturday, which is really a perfect Saturday for South Carolina, not just a 52-7 win at Arkansas, which has been historically a very tough place for them to get a win in Fayetteville. But beyond that, Georgia lost to Missouri. Florida lost to LSU. Missouri lost its starting quarterback in James Franklin, a very dynamic playmaker that they're just not the same team, even though they're undefeated, one of two SEC teams undefeated. Missouri's not the same team without James Franklin. So when you look at everything that happened, it really pulled South Carolina back into the SEC East race, where they don't quite control their own destiny. Georgia still has to lose another game. When they're resembling the Walking Dead, that's certainly something that's very possible. But if they do, all South Carolina has to do is win out. So it's a very interesting race.
Well, absolutely. Now, and we look at your game last week when you were against Arkansas, and talk with us a little bit about some of the keys to that game that was really different than the game with the Georgia game.
Well, I think that you start with the defense, and last week was a lot of controversy, obviously, with Jadeveon Clowney and not playing the week before against Kentucky. And for a young team, you're always kind of interested in how they deal with something like that when they are in the national spotlight for reasons that aren't exactly positive. The defense really stepped up and played its most complete game of the season. The defense had allowed in the previous three games 51 fourth-quarter points against Vanderbilt, Central Florida, and Kentucky. Not exactly a murderer's row. They obviously gave up a touchdown in the first series against Arkansas, and then it was smooth sailing after that. If South Carolina continues to get that level of defensive play, its offense has been consistently dominant throughout the season. It's going to be good enough to make some noise in the SEC, to possibly get to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. Still a ways to go for any national title consideration, but certainly within its own conference, it's sitting in a very very attractive spot right now.
We're talking with Ryan Wood, beat writer for the South Carolina Gamecocks for the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina. Now, I ask you this, Ryan, maybe more as a fan and not as a beat writer, but, however, maybe you've got the same answer for both. What does Connor Shaw mean to South Carolina football team?
Well, obviously, he's 22-4 as a starter, which is the best winning percentage, the best record of any quarterback in program history. He's a guy that could hurt you both with his arm and with his legs. Steve Spurrier actually mentioned it directly this week that the common misconception you have with those mobile quarterbacks that can pick up yards on the ground is, well, they must be compensating for something else. Maybe they're not quite a great passer. Carter Shaw has been as good of a game manager, as good of a passer in this conference as any quarterback, and that's saying a lot when you've got guys like Johnny Manziel, you got guys like Aaron Murray. There's only two quarterbacks in the country that have 10 touchdown passes and zero interceptions this season. One is Connor Shaw, the other is Oregon quarterback Marcus Mariota, who obviously is a Heisman candidate, if not front runner. So when you look at his efficiency as a passer this year, it's been uncanny.
Well, one of the things I guess I would want you mentioned Steve Spurrier. I would hate to be in that locker room, hate to be in those meetings when things weren't going good with Steve Spurrier. And fortunately, Clowney is back in the good grace, and the offense is gaining yards really at a record pace. But this is not the time, and I think probably, and maybe this isn't the quote, but I don't think this is the time that the Gamecocks can sit back and be complacent where they're at. They can't be happy with where they're at. What is Steve Spurrier talking about in the locker room with these Gamecocks?
You know, I actually asked him this week, because they had proven now that they can play and deal with controversy, deal with adversity, well, how do they handle success? And that's kind of as a young team with a lot of underclassmen, really that first taste of success after the blowout at Arkansas, how do they handle that going to Tennessee? And he was very direct in saying that we hadn't done it enough to get big-headed yet. They don't think that they're hot stuff because of one blowout. Now, that's the right thing to say. Obviously, actions on the field mean a lot more. It'll be interesting Saturday to see if this is a team that can you know, not overlook Tennessee with Missouri looming the next week. But certainly he said the right things to keep this young team hungry, motivated, and focused on the right track. Hello.
Are you there?
Yes.
I apologize. You know what? It's been one of those days. Everything's, you know, once in a while I forget to turn on my mic because I do turn off my mic sometimes. So hey, I know you're new to the show, but anytime you're sad sack man, you just gotta man up and do your laps, I guess. I will tell you this. I was talking. What I was saying was, I want to refer to your South Carolina notes from yesterday. You said Connor Shaw's defense takes too much of the blame for the struggles. How much of the blame does Connor Shaw put on his own shoulders?
Obviously Connor Shaw is a quarterback. He's saying that the defense took too much of the blame for his struggles this season. Like I said, 51 fourth quarter points against Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Central Florida, not exactly a murderer's row. This is after the past couple of years, defense has been very dominant in South Carolina. You look at some of the guys, Stephon Gilmore, Melvin Ingram, guys that have gone on to the NFL. It's not been that type of defense this year. Connor Shaw kind of came to his defense's defense and saying that, you know, hey, it's not all what it appears to be. It's not all just the defense playing poorly and everything hunky-dory with the offense. He said that when he first took over as quarterback, he could remember when the defense was more the dominant side of the ball. The offense was trying to find its identity and kind of struggling along that process. And he, you know, the defense had the offense's back then, so he kind of sees it as the same type of thing, even though the strengths are kind of switched a little bit.
Well, we're talking with Ryan Wood of the Post and Courier, Charleston, South Carolina, beat writer for the South Carolina Gamecocks on College Football Saturday, talking a little bit of SEC. Now, the Gamecocks go visit Old Rocky Top down in Knoxville on Tennessee. Huge game. And you would think that the Gamecocks coming in at 5-1 and the Volunteers coming in at 3-3, but they're at home. And I think if there's one of few games that Tennessee circles every year, they say we have to beat South Carolina. This year is no different. So all that is said, Tennessee is going to prepare well for South Carolina. South Carolina has to do the same for Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at how far Tennessee's fallen, it's kind of amazing. Doing a story for Friday's Post and Courier, Tennessee has the same number of bowl victories, which is one, than they've had coaching changes, which is two, since Steve Spurrier came to South Carolina in 2005. In the 90s, they never had fewer than eight wins. In the 14 years since the 90s ended, they've had eight wins only seven times. It's been a completely different program. But with that said, it's always special when you go into Neyland Stadium. They hold over 100,000 stadium. And you look at what happened 2 weeks ago with Georgia, who was ranked number six at the time, beating overtime to escape with a win. It's certainly no easy place to play.
Well, absolutely. So what are some of the keys to the game, if you will, and I certainly don't want to – we talked with you a little bit on – Thursday, which is when we recorded this interview, so I know you've got an article coming out tomorrow on Friday, which is now published. So I guess we can ask you, what are some of the keys to the game from number 11 South Carolina Gamecocks coming in at 5-1 to beat Tennessee?
Well, I think that they've just got to continue to do what they've been doing. If what happened in Fayetteville last week is any indication of where this team is right now, it should be a good Saturday. I think that obviously on the road against an inferior opponent, which they are, if you look at the polls or if you ask Las Vegas, it's always important to come out strong. If you can put them away early, that's always preferable. The longer Tennessee kind of hangs around, I think the more of a chance they're going to obviously have for an upset. If South Carolina is able to avoid doing that, if they're able to get a few touchdowns in the first quarter and really get out of the gate strong, I think that it's going to be probably a long day for the Vols.
Well, absolutely, and you guys have won five straight times out there. The 11th-ranked South Carolina Gamecocks will certainly attempt to extend their winning streak to five games on Saturday afternoon. Obviously, this afternoon, and it's certainly one of our feature games here on College Football Saturday, so we appreciate Ryan Wood of the Post and Courier Journal in Charleston, South Carolina, joining us. But, you know, really, winning streak, five straight games, if you will, I believe it's five straight games when they come in on Saturday afternoon since their loss to Georgia. Let me ask you this. What was it like in the locker room, if you could paint a picture for us? Steve Spurrier goes in there and he has to deal with this loss. How did he handle it? Was it one of those things where you just stay away from him, or is he really as bad behind the scenes as we all picture him to be?
You know, what he is interesting, which can be a challenge at times. It can be a blessing at times. But as a reporter, as a professional journalist, it is always preferable to cover a coach who is interesting, who will be blunt and honest, who will say things, not hide behind cliches and those sort of things. You know, he's certainly not averse to calling anybody out. That goes from, you know, he has called out fans before for leaving early in games. He has called out plenty of media personalities and journalists throughout his time as a coach at every stop he's ever been. But it always makes for an interesting time. And I think that when you're on a beat, it can be very easy to be kind of bogged down into the mundaneness of it all. It certainly is preferable to have a guy who will do the things that Steve Spurrier does.
Well, one thing for sure is he produces winners. And last point here, one winner that he is absolutely producing in South Carolina is Connor Shaw. We talked with him a little bit earlier in this interview. He's basically been flawless this season, completing 68.5% of his passes while yet to have to throw an interception on 124 attempts. He's passed for 1,146 yards, run for 319, and accounted for 12 total touchdowns. This, to me, sounds like a future NFL player and maybe thrown in the mix for a Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, you know, I think that when it comes to the Heisman, you got to have gaudy numbers. You got to have numbers that are almost like, you know, EA Sports video game type numbers. I'm not sure Connor Shaw will ever have that level of statistics. What he is you know, he's the best game manager in the SEC. Maybe not the best quarterback, certainly not the best pro prospect, but and game manager as itself, as a title, sometimes gets a bad rap. You're a game manager because you can't go out there and win games on your own or those sort of things. But in terms of making plays, the number of plays you make for the mistakes you make, it's a very important thing to be able to manage a game from that position. And Connor Shaw does that as well as anybody. Like I said earlier, 10 touchdowns, zero interceptions. The only other quarterback to do that in the country this season is Marcus Mariota out at Oregon, who is going to probably be a Heisman finalist, certainly on that right path to be that guy. When you're in that kind of conversation, Connor Shaw is certainly having a great senior season.
Well, I want to talk with you real quickly, just kind of around the SEC, and I know you used to. Did you report for Auburn as well, or did you were associated with Auburn somehow, weren't you?
I covered Auburn before South Carolina.
Okay.
So, and I guess that's my point. You're certainly no stranger to covering the SEC, and got to be a little bit different for you writing about the Gamecocks as opposed to Auburn. But we look around the SEC, and really, if you're going to win a national title, you have got some national champions. And we look at Missouri, and we look at Bama, we look at Texas A&M, and even though they're maybe a little bit further down than anticipated, Texas A&M is certainly a team to contend with in the SEC. You still don't want to rule out Georgia and Ole Miss. It's just littered. If we could even the bad teams are great teams in college football, so it's really kind of hard to put the mix on that, but. Who do you see South Carolina being their biggest, hey, we've got to get past this team. We can beat these guys. We beat these guys. We can win our conference.
As far as the conference goes, I think Florida, November 16th, which is a home game, is going to probably be the best test remaining. And that's because, like I said, James Franklin being out as the quarterback in 2 weeks for Missouri, unable to play. That just changes the dynamic of that football team. Missouri is one of two undefeated left in the SEC along with Alabama, but they're not the same team without James Franklin. So I think that game kind of changes. Florida has probably the best defense in the SEC. Certainly that they can be between the Gators and Alabama for the best defense in the league. That's going to be a challenge November 16th. And then the interesting thing, of course, is that the toughest game remaining on the schedule for South Carolina is not even an SEC team. Clemson, November 30th, a big game every year, a huge rivalry, a huge game for Clemson coming up Saturday against Florida State. That's probably going to be the toughest challenge left for these Gamecocks on the season. It won't affect SEC standings. It won't affect whether or not they get to the championship game for the conference. But there are a few big tests coming up.
All right, Ryan, we appreciate you taking time to join us. Ryan Wood, beat writer for the South Carolina Gamecocks for the Posted Courier out there in Charleston, South Carolina. Now, Ryan, I know you're about to become a daddy of twins. I know you've got a youngin' already, but are you ready for double your money per se?
Yeah, it was shocking when I found that out. I'll be honest. That's one of those pieces of news where you hear and you're not quite sure you heard it right, so you need to have your wife repeat the news. And yeah, it was very surprising, but obviously a great blessing. I mean, when you talk about something like that, it's just very, very excited, and life is definitely good right now.
Absolutely, and full disclosure here, your father-in-law is a colleague of mine, and I appreciate him helping us get together for this interview. But that said, I know he is one proud grandpa, and he just he cannot wait for the twins. So I just want to wish you the best of luck on that, and I want to thank you for coming on, and certainly you're welcome anytime at any time to come on here. Real quickly, I always ask all my guests this: is there anything that you'd like to tell us, anything we haven't asked you about, anything at all how it pertains to the South Carolina Gamecocks?
No, you know, it's just I think it is what it is when you think about a Steve Spurrier coach team. Offense is dynamic. The defense is kind of finding its own way. It'll be interesting to see where, you know, here in the middle of October, still early, but the teeth of the schedule, the teeth of the races, and all the conferences are starting to get heated up. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the SEC East.
Well, I know you've got certainly some affection back here in Indiana. Getting ready to go into our NFL talk here. I'm going to be talking with Greg Regstraw of 1070 The Fan. But you look at Peyton Manning coming back to Indianapolis, how big of a game. That's not just any other game, but how big of a game. And you as a fan and as a reporter, what do you think about Peyton Manning coming back to the Indianapolis Colts? That came out wrong. Coming back to Lucas Oil to play at the Lucas Oil Stadiums. Peyton's not coming back. Irsay made that very, very clear. Peyton is not coming back to the Colts. I want to make that clear. But, no, Peyton Manning making his return to Lucas Oil Stadium. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I can't talk to that about that as a fan. I grew up as a Colts fan, and, you know, they were just the team that was closest. So I would say that it's probably the most emotional, from a fan standpoint, the most emotional regular season game of my lifetime. I think that, you know, obviously there's some playoff games. The AFC Championship in 2006 comes to mind. There were some playoff games that certainly carried more weight and more emotion. But in terms of regular season games and in terms of raw emotion, to see Peyton Manning in an orange Broncos, well, I guess it'd be white Sunday night, in a road jersey inside the Colts home stadium is going to be, it's going to take a lot of getting used to.
Absolutely. And, you know, the Indianapolis Star this week put out a comic, and you may have seen it, an editorial comic for Mr. Varvel, that it showed a dilemma of a fan. And they've got the number 18 and the number 12 in their closet, and he's standing between them, and it says the war, and the caption just simply says the war of 1812. So it's going to be interesting to see if any Colts fans are brave enough to come into Lucas Oil with a number 18 jersey on. But certainly going to be a lot of fun having Peyton Manning back at the house here in Indianapolis, Indiana. Ryan Wood, beat writer for the South Carolina Gamecocks, coming on College Football Saturday today to talk some SEC with us, and we really appreciate your time, sir, and have yourself a good week and a safe Saturday.
Absolutely. You take care.
All right. Okay, that's a wrap. Ryan, are you good?
Yep, sounds good. Thanks, man.
I appreciate it, man. I'm sorry we had that delay. That typically doesn't happen. I don't know what caused that, but I'll get you an MP3 sent out. It might be Saturday afternoon or Sunday, but I'll make sure that Michelle sends you a link so that you can listen to the segment live as well.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Thanks, Ryan. Have a good day.
All right.